check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
First against fourth in the district line derby, Rangnick finally takes the wheel of the good ship and Manchester United. Mourinho returns to his old hunting ground, our first Der Klassiker of the season and MLS Conference Finals. It's the weekend preview. It's weekend preview time, and there's a lot to get through. I'm here with Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce, and of course, Jonathan Johnson. Que golazo! Weekend preview begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Que Golazo, our weekend preview. Thank you so much for tuning in. Leave us a comment, like the video, subscribe to the channel. We are so close, everybody, to 6,000 subscribers. Keep on coming. Hit that notification bell while you're at it. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It helps us to grow the show. It's the weekend preview. Woohoo! Let's go with Mountain Man. Heath Pierce, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to see everybody heading into the weekend, which is great. Some great matchups coming up. So, yeah, let's go.
Absolutely. Jimmy Conrad, what's up, buddy?
I'm excited as well. I didn't know Modesto was in the mountains, but I learned something new today. So I appreciate that.
Modesto in the mountains. I love it. Jonathan Johnson, he's wearing Real Betis today. How are you, bud?
Hey there, guys. Doing very well, thanks. Delighted to know that the fresh mountain air is doing Heath Pierce's hairdo the world of good.
I know. He looks so ravenous. I love it. I love it. Welcome, everybody, to Weekend Preview. Heath Pierce, Jimmy Conrad, Jonathan Johnson. We're going to break down all the main matches of the weekend. We will begin in the Premier League. We'll take a break, and then we'll go around Europe and wrap it all up, of course, in North America with some good games in MLS as conference finals takes place. Let's begin in the Premier League. The London Derby. A London Derby, West Ham against Chelsea. It's a big one, of course, for so many reasons. Chelsea continue to be Chelsea no matter what happens. And West Ham, by the way, who haven't won actually in the last three games. Is there fizzle? Has it run out? Let's begin with you, Jimmy Conrad. West Ham, Chelsea, it's a good game for the neutral, good game for the London Derby. What say you?
Yeah, this is a good one. There's some injury concerns for Chelsea, so I'll start there. It looks like that N'Golo Kanté is going to be out, so that's a big loss for them. Ben Chilwell still going to be out. They're now, I guess, flirting, if I'm understanding Tuchel right, if I'm trying to read between the lines, that Callum Hudson-Odoi could actually be a wing back on the left side to make sure they give enough rest to Marcus Alonso, because Ben Chilwell is going to be out for, I think, the rest of the season. So interesting balancing there. We saw Christian Pulisic actually drop off and play a little wing back for some time. He didn't seem all that pleased, but playing time is playing time, my friend. Now, Chelsea beat both West Ham in both fixtures last season, including a 1-0 result at the London Stadium. As you mentioned, West Ham maybe starting to fall apart. Chelsea have won 5 consecutive league games on the road in a row, so that is interesting. I think Chelsea might be catching him at the right time. Romelu Lukaku's coming back into the team. Will he be sharp? I think he'll be fine. He's Romelu Lukaku. And I just want to throw out there that Chelsea have a relatively kind, like, holiday fixture list. They have Leeds, Everton, Wolves, Aston Villa, and Brighton before the end of the month. And when you compare that to some of the other teams, I'm looking at you, Man City and Liverpool, who they're competing against for the title, there's a lot more difficult. That said, their first two league matches after the new year in 2022 in the league are both Liverpool and Man City. Those are going to be cracking affairs. But as it stands right now, I think Chelsea's going to have enough to do the business. I do want to throw in there really quick that West Ham have scored a goal in every single game at home this season. So I'm feeling Chelsea to win. Both teams to score plus 290. You're welcome.
Wow, I like that, Jimmy. I mean, the only thing I'd add to what Jimmy said, because I think that's spot on, is obviously the role that Azpilicueta could have to play in this match. Obviously, wingbacks being such an important role for this Chelsea side if he does end up playing. And then also Chelsea have won their last 5 away. And so I like their odds to continue this one. If Lukaku gets the start, I certainly think there's a win there. And they're not struggling to score goals as well, scoring more than 2, I believe, in most of their last away matches. So overall, I like Chelsea in this one. Chelsea are going to be Chelsea, as you said, Luis. So I don't really like or don't think that they're at much stress. Obviously, as Jimmy mentioned, some squad rotations due to injuries and things like that. But overall, Chelsea should be able to control this one.
Yeah, definitely. I'm struggling to see past a Chelsea victory at this moment in time. West Ham, like Luis Miguel was saying earlier, kind of, you know, losing that little bit of verve that they had at the beginning of the season. You know, and I'm sure it'll come back. But, you know, at this moment in time, their form's a little bit patchy. Not the right kind of preparation coming into a big clash like this against Chelsea, especially when it's a London derby. So I'm with you guys. I think Jimmy's tip is a wise one. You know, and I think I can see both teams scoring, but Chelsea winning this one.
Yeah, I think the consensus is going that way. Before we, Jimmy gives us quick betting tips on this one, and we do the predictions for this game. You mentioned Kante obviously out, but Chelsea are missing like seven players as well. I mean, Reece James, by the way, didn't feature midweek. Obviously, we're trying to see if he'll even be fit for that, as well as Chabola as well. You know, he was hurt as well. So there are some complications, but this is Chelsea. We've talked about it, right? The royalty of the Premier League right now, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, and everybody else. Between fourth and 10th, everybody, there's a 5-point differential, you know? So you can clearly see there are, you know, when it comes to the top half of the table, it's like Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, everybody else. So Jimmy, quick betting tips on this one and then predictions, I guess.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I think that because West Ham has found a knack of scoring goals, they've only been shut out twice in all competitions this season. And one of those was against Wolves 2 weeks ago away from home. And my fear for West Ham a little bit is that Wolves set up very similarly, or did in this particular game, with three center backs and two wing backs. And West Ham couldn't really find their way. They couldn't get a lot. They didn't have as much possession. They weren't making a lot of their chances. And so that's something to keep in mind. And then they had a 0-0 draw against Southampton much, much earlier away from home as well. But at home, they seem to have a little bit of that juice. So as I mentioned, I think that both teams are going to score, but I'll add in the extra benefit of Chelsea actually getting the win. So Chelsea to win, both teams to score plus 290 is something I'm looking at. If you want really quick, if you want Lukaku to score anytime, that's plus 145. That's not bad value, but make sure that you look to see who the starting first before you make any of these bets.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Chelsea. Obviously, last three away matches, there's been more than two goals scored by the team. And I agree with both JJ and Jimmy's sentiments of West Ham being able to get a goal in this one. So a 2-1 win for Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. Actually, just one other thing I guess I'll mention, given that I've already given my score in, was wondering what you guys make of the criticism of Saul recently. Because he's definitely not hit the ground running as many people expected him to with Chelsea.
Yeah, Jimmy, feel free to jump on that one. Saul obviously has had a very tough start, and obviously, you know, being subbed as well. You know, Tuchel did blame it a little bit on the yellow card, but I'm not so sure. I think obviously we know that his form hasn't been that great since joining Chelsea.
No, I just jump in and say that Diego Simeone let Saul go for a reason. And I almost liken it to Real Madrid letting Varane and Sergio Ramos go. They know where those guys were mentally, physically, emotionally. And Ramos and Varane can't stay healthy. And Saul just can't really lock in. And I don't know what's going on with him per se behind the scenes. It might be something that's something going on off the field that's permeating to not playing well on the field, but also he's changing leagues, he's changing teams. They've got a team that already knows how they want to play, and he's got to figure out a way to fit in. There's a whole bunch of different factors, but I always thought it was pretty surprising that Leti was like, yeah, sure. So go ahead. No problem. We'll be fine. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's very true. All right. Before we wrap this game up, we've had our predictions. Just a reminder that Chelsea remain top of the table right now with 33 points. West Ham in fourth place, 24 points. But as we mentioned, it's very tight. It's very important for West Ham to get something out of it, but you don't see it really happening with this Chelsea side. All right, let's move on here. Sticking in the Premier League, Manchester United, Michael Carrick did his work. He's done. And we welcome in the godfather of gegenpressing in Ralf Rangnick. Very impressed with his press conference, by the way. I mean, as you should be, right? But United against Crystal Palace, thanks to that win against Arsenal, Manchester United have closed in a little bit more now. They're seventh, 21 points, so they continue to climb up the table. Crystal Palace has suffered as of late. Of course, they remain in 11th with 16 points. No Patrick Vieira, by the way, in that press conference. Maybe he was too busy trying to figure out how this one is going to work out. But let's begin with you, Heath Pierce. Manchester United against Crystal Palace. Well, Ralf Rangnick, I mean, what do you make now as he will be right there beginning his campaign, his interim campaign as of right now with Manchester United against Palace?
Well, one, you always look for that new manager bump, right, that you get out of those. But then the part two was actually how do you establish a form and a rhythm? I think the team is currently stuck between three managers or three philosophies and even more of the way just the club has been over the years of just some confusion as to the culture of the team, the way in which they play, how they press, where they drop, the lines of confrontation, things like that. So I worry about that in the short term. Obviously, against Arsenal, they were really good at attacking the fullbacks. That's another thing they're going to have to do in this match against Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace, on the flip side, have sort of rude missed chances. They're not getting a ton of them, but when they do, they need to be able to put those away. And so that's important as well. And then obviously the Ronaldo story continues where he's obviously up in age. You've now got an opportunity to rotate him in the squad. Do you rotate him or not? And there's a difference between rotation or benching, like we talked about last week with Ronaldo being left on the bench and being unhappy about that, and actually managing the workload of a player who's up there in age and knowing that you're going to need a lot of him, a lot of minutes out of him and a lot of performance out of him in the upcoming matches. He's not somebody, and a certain point, I guess what I'm saying is you get to a point where you have to protect the player from themselves. Ronaldo knows his body. He's probably better than anyone besides maybe Tom Brady in terms of taking his health and wellness serious. Of every minute of every day meaning something to him. But if you were to rotate him out of this squad, it gives an opportunity for Van de Beek or Martial to perhaps get some minutes and contribute to the team there. I think that there was, while it was a chaotic win against Arsenal, there is some sort of confidence that comes out of that. And so, yeah, I look at it in this one and see there being an opportunity for Ranić to be able to establish something new. Obviously, 2 days in charge is not enough to make any significant changes, but he could start to tinker a little bit with it or just focus on one thing at a time and say, hey, we're going to press in these spots. We're going to be very good at pressing, and then we'll worry about the rest of it later. The issue, by the way, before I wrap this thought up, is like you said, Luis, they're getting closer to a top four, and that's where you start to feel a little bit of a pressure instead of saying, hey, we're focusing on the team and the team first. Now we're focusing on results. And I know there's always that's left in the balance always when you're playing at a club like Manchester United, but it might be a case of one step back to take two steps forward in terms of establishing a style of play for the future and sort of reestablishing a culture of what the expectations are for playing for Manchester United.
Jimbo.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've been really impressed with and found quite intriguing in their press conference is that Ranić is definitely not going to give up this idea of potentially getting the United gig beyond the end of this season. You know, he accepts that he's there as the interim right now, but I think he definitely has some designs on getting the job long term. So we'll see, you know, how quickly it takes for that scenario to turn. But I think as well, one thing that he will have benefited from with this sort of drawn out process of actually getting him into place is the fact that the United players have known that this last match or so, particularly against Arsenal, was basically an audition, you know, for who can catch his eye first, who can give Ranić some ideas as to what he can do, stylistically with this team, you know, how they fit into previous formations that he's had success with, or whether he's going to try something completely new that we haven't seen before. So I'm really curious to see how it plays out. And I think, Carrick deserves big credit as well for the way that he handled himself, in the short interim period between Ranić and Solskjaer. I think he deserves to leave with his head up high from Old Trafford. And I also think it's admirable that, you know, he's so loyal to Solskjaer, which he was kind of hinting at when he was speaking publicly.
Hey, Jimmy, can I let me ask you a question real quick? With Carrick, as JJ just mentioned, and then I'll obviously jump back on the topic, but what do you think is next for him in terms of you get a taste of first team management? I mean, you're doing your coaching badges. You've stepped into those environments before as a coach. I mean, what is it like? Do you think that he can come back and just sort of sit in the role of an assistant? Or do you think that now his ambition is first team football, first team manager?
I think he's got a taste, Heath. I think he knows what it feels like. And obviously, he's got a pretty good record, 2 wins and a draw against the reigning champions of Europe. So there's a lot for him to hang his hat on and say, hey, if you just gave me that type of trust, I could, you know, actually produce for you. That said, he did come out and say that he wanted to spend more time with his family. And right when he retired as a player, he immediately joined Jose Mourinho's staff and was thrown right into the mix and never really got that time to relax and that it's all-encompassing is what I wanted to say. And it's interesting because that's my issue as a coach on a personal level, that my girls, I don't want to miss some of these really important years of their life and maybe have that regret 20 years from now. Like, maybe I should have just been around. I could have held off my coaching for a while. So I don't know how old Carrick's kids are, but I'm sure he's starting to feel that a little bit because he mentioned as much in his press conference. And I relate to that in a big way.
And so he has time, right? He has time, 40 years old. Like, he's got time.
Totally.
Sit back and, yeah.
But did you see the hug that Bruno Fernandes gave him after the game? It was a nice, long, somewhat romantic hug between Carrick and Bruno Fernandes. And I was like, what's going on? I didn't realize that was what was happening behind the scenes, that not only was he stepping down, he was leaving the club entirely. And I wonder what kind of effect that's going to have. That's a little bit different than a new manager bounce. You know, Ralf Rangnick's going to come in, but they just had some success with Carrick, so it must be a little bit odd at this point. Now, these guys are
you know what? Just before you carry on, Jimmy, I think it's going to help, because I think Manchester United's biggest issue has been they've been too emotionally attached to so many things. Sir Alex Ferguson, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Carrick, they're like the ghosts of the past have continued to be there, and this needs to be a blank slate. And I think Ralf Rangnick's going to come in and be like, and he said it in the press conference, this game has changed tremendously at the turn of the 21st century, and Manchester United need to realize that it's physical, mental, whatever. And I think, honestly, with all due respect, the more you get rid of the ghosts of the past, the better it's going to be for your future, I think. Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, I just wanted to say, with this regard to this game in particular, Crystal Palace, I think, is a very good counter-attacking team. And I don't think that matches up well against Manchester United. What we've seen, even with like Young Boys in the Champions League, when Leicester came out and they came out and punched them in the face, they made them go work. They made them try to play through difficult situations. They really suffocated Bruno Fernandes or any of their other attacking talent and made them pick up the ball a little bit deeper. I think if Crystal Palace want to have a chance in this one, they can't sit back and then hope to hit them on the counter with Zaha. That can work, but we saw it with Newcastle, who did it to great effect. It can only work for so long. And that was at Old Trafford. It was 1-1 for a while, and then they got unlocked, and then that was that. So I worry about that. And because Christian Benteke missed a bit of a sitter against Leeds, they end up giving a late penalty. They lose that one. That's got to be heartbreaking. That's the first time they've lost back-to-back games in the league all season. Mm-hmm. The one saving grace, I think, for Crystal Palace is that Manchester United have given up a goal in their last 15 games at Old Trafford in all competitions. So they're going to get some looks, no matter who plays and no matter who is the manager, because it's going to be hard for Rangnick to figure that out in a couple of days in charge. So I think there is some hope there, but I don't think they can go back and say, oh, we're going to get a clean sheet either. So I like United to win this one. I think that they're going to have enough. I think there's enough of a manager bounce there to make something happen. I'm curious to see who he starts, so obviously keep an eye on that. But if you want Manchester United to win in over 2.5 goals, which is, I'm kind of leaning towards that, it's plus 150. Also, this bet seems to hit a lot. Cristiano Ronaldo to score the first or last goal of the game. So either he's setting the tone or he's ended up being Mr. Clutch. I'm telling you, that bet hits all the time because the guy just loves scoring big goals in big moments. That is plus 138. Maybe not the best value, but something to look at for sure.
I love it. By the way, this would be redemptionville for Manchester United because they failed to beat Crystal Palace last season. They lost and drew as well. But many, many good points, including that manager bounce. HP, quick prediction on this game.
Oh, I think Manchester United, I mean, every time Jimmy brings up that Man United stat of being scored on, it just blows my mind that is real and it continues to grow as a stat. But again, I think Manchester United, I thought the draw for a little bit just because Crystal Palace earlier on in the season were sort of the draw kings and staying in matches. But then it sort of turned into when those draws turn to losses, you start to become a little more problematic and you want those draws to turn into wins. And now to have two losses in a row, I just think Manchester United are too strong in this one. Whether Ronaldo starts or not, it's an opportunity and a tryout for most of these players that are going to be motivated. Again, that new manager bounce, I think, is really important. So I'm saying Manchester United 2-0 on this one.
All right. JJ?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say either 2-0 or 3-1. I can definitely see United winning by two and winning fairly comfortably and giving Rangnick a successful start.
All right. Well, before we move on to Everton Arsenal, just a quick mention for what Cristiano Ronaldo just achieved this week, by the way, 801 goals. He is the only player in history to do that in top flight matches. People talk about the legendary Pele and even Romario with 1,000 plus, but a lot of those games were friendlies. When you just think about top flight games, Ronaldo, and now he's what, the European Championship top scorer, the top scorer in the Champions League, I think the most capped European male player as well.
And he finished sixth on the Ballon d'Or. Imagine how good the top five are.
I know, that's why he didn't show up, right? He usually knows when he's not going to win it. All right, well, let's focus now to a club that's really not doing very well, and I wonder how long this will last. Rafa Benitez and Everton as they host Arsenal. We know, we've talked about Arsenal, of course, HP's Arsenal. You know, there's an identity at least. They lost in United, but at least you know who they are. Everton right now not doing well at all. Toffees winless in 8, losing 6 of their last 7 Premier League games. JJ, is Rafa Benitez the problem or is he the easiest scapegoat? Because, you know, this squad is not like has been changed that much in recent years. What say you as Everton host Arsenal?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, Benitez has been very unlucky for a start, given that Everton have been missing so many important players. But also at the same time, you know, I think the signs were there that Everton were going to have a problematic period of a couple of years under Ancelotti. You know, I kind of think it was a blessing in disguise that Raul came in and picked him up. I'm not sure that Benitez was the right choice for Everton. And that's not a knock on Benitez. Obviously, I rate him highly as a coach, as many of us probably do, given what he's achieved in the game. I just always think that you're going to get off on the wrong foot when you've had success, either as a player or a coach of your bitter rivals. You're always going to make it a bit harder to win the fans over. And although the fans are only just one part of that problem, that negative spiral that's going on at Everton at this moment in time, you know, I really don't think that helped him, you know, get off to the sort of start that he needed. Obviously, there's some issues that have been going on off the pitch as well. There's still, you know, the situation with the stadium dragging on, you know, so there's that kind of question of like identity surrounding the club. But, you know, at the end of the day, this squad, when you look at it on paper, should be doing much, much better than they're doing at present, you know, injuries aside. So for me, I think that it's only a matter of time before Everton look to make a change. And given some of the speculation of late, it could even be that they find themselves changing hands in terms of owners not too far away in the future.
Yep. I got three words for Everton. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Make it happen. We want him back in the league, everybody. We want him back in the league. Rafa Benitez isn't working out. You want somebody that's less organized. I think that's going to cause chaos and you're going to win some games. Okay, I just want to throw that out there. The Gunners have only won once in the last five trips to Goodison Park. It was back in 2017 in the league when they made that happen. That said, as you guys mentioned, Everton are struggling. We saw them get decimated by Liverpool. In fairness, Liverpool's decimated everybody. So I think you take that with a little grain of salt, and they're almost unplayable when they're playing as well as they are currently. My issue with Everton is, and I had the same issue when Rafa Benitez was coaching Newcastle, you start so defensive. You're always thinking defense first. You're always thinking, all right, we're going to defend first, and then we'll figure out our attack, right? And right now, they're really just attacking with Richarlison, and they had Solomon Rondon start. And I feel like you might need to get fired just for that alone. But you have him up there, and maybe he will be playing underneath him this particular game. I mean, that's – or Demarai Gray actually scored a good goal. And Richarlison and Demarai Gray linked up well for that Liverpool goal. And if they can kind of tap into that, but still, you're hoping for a couple good touches and a couple good runs to really solve your problems. And when you start playing against teams that are organized, it's going to make a big difference. I was actually pretty disappointed in Arsenal's defending against Manchester United. You know, kind of lackluster clearance led to the first one that Ben White didn't get enough on.
Yeah, very unorganized. Yeah.
Just these little things that I think are actually very easily correctable. And I think that will end up being something that Arteta looks at. Like, okay, we lost to United, but we kind of gave them those opportunities and they kind of shut off when the ball went wide. They weren't tracking those runners that are coming in deep or just kind of hanging out there. Again, these are very easy to correct. So I'm hopeful that will get solved. And if that's the case, I think it's going to be harder for Everton. I like Arsenal to win this game. And I don't actually say that very often, but I like Arsenal to win this game.
Yeah, I don't say that often either, but I agree with you. I agree with you, Jimmy. Obviously, in this one, as you mentioned, I think when you look at the fullback situation with Tavares and Tomiyasu, they're the weakest points in there. They're obviously, you know, getting the biggest excuses because they're the newest players in the squad. Give them time to adjust to the Premier League. Sambi Lokonga comes back into this match too, which I think gives them some more solidity. Mm-hmm. With Mohamed Elneny, just to me, has always been somebody that's been subpar what my expectations are of when he first came in and has never really rounded the corner in terms of quality. But I still like Arsenal's odds to win this one, mostly because of the injury concerns of Everton. And obviously, Jimmy, you're lucky because Solomon Rondon is now out. He's not going to be.
I'm lucky. Rafa Benitez is lucky. What are you talking about?
But, you know, you've got Calvert-Lewin, you've got Tom Davies, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Yerry Mina is doubtful for this one too. So even though they would match up well in terms of Arsenal being the team that I'm saying, judge them based on two matches, they're now testing me on this. Okay, we'll lose every other match and then we'll win the one after that. It's just hard to know when Arsenal are going to show up as a complete performance. And when they do, you go, okay, wow, there's something here. And you go, oh, look at the young players. And then when they lose, you go, yeah, we have young players and new players. So it's a bit confusing. Arsenal, obviously, lost heavily to Liverpool and United. So showing that they struggle against some of the bigger teams. If Everton can step up and approach this game as a big team or really create that chaos for Arsenal, make them uncomfortable, that's when Arsenal really struggle. But I still like the odds of Arsenal winning this one against the depleted and depressed sort of Everton side.
Yeah, well, listen, before we wrap this one up, I mean, we've said it a long time, right? When you talk about when you play Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, it's a different narrative. Like, that's just like a different kettle of fish. So I'm just looking at the other games that Everton have lost as well, right? That 1-0 loss to Brentford as well before that. Like, there's just...
They lost to us.
They lost 3-0. 3-0. 3-0. They got killed. They're just so reactive, like Jimmy said as well. Put it this way. If Arsenal don't win this game, I'll be very, very surprised. And honestly, about Rafa Benitez, Everton should be looking at another Spanish manager who's available. Diego Martinez should be all over this job right now. Mm-hmm. He is so good, and he'll be able to rectify.
Too many Spaniards in England
now. But we're swapping.
JJ's wearing a Spanish shirt. This is just, you know.
Heath, we're swapping.
The mafia is thriving in England right now.
Heath, we're swapping. But we're just swapping. We're saying, okay, Rafa, Diego,
one for one.
We're not adding. All right, well, let's do quick predictions there. Jimmy, you gave it to us. You said on Arsenal win. What was your final score?
Yeah, I'll go 2-1. If you want Arsenal to win in over 2.5 goals, that will be plus 245. But ultimately, plus 114, Arsenal the favorites in this one. A little bit of a surprise there, but I think maybe you throw them into your parlay to spice it up a little bit.
I like it. HP, what's your score for this one?
God, I just want to give them a draw. And just because traditionally...
You could. It's pretty good value.
As Jimmy mentioned, Arsenal have struggled on the road at Goodison Park going all the way back to 2017. So I think that's a bit of an issue on this one. But I just think Everton are too weak. And I could actually see this being a tight one and Arsenal pulling this off 1-0.
All right, JJ?
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0. I'm pretty confident Arsenal are going to get this done. And nail put the final nail in Rafa's coffin.
Yeah, I totally agree. By the way, this is a big game for Arsenal for other reasons as well. Emotionally, Mikel Arteta, Everton were his first English club as well, from Real Sociedad. But if Arsenal win and West Ham draw or lose to Chelsea, Arsenal go fourth. So it's a big game for Arsenal. And Everton. All right. So elsewhere in the Premier League, Des Norris, let's show us that graphic if you're watching this on YouTube. Plenty of games. By the way, we've already talked the London Derby. Newcastle host Burnley. Newcastle, yeah. Boys. I know that you want to say something before the break, but my goodness, time. Jimmy, time is, I mean, it's already run out. What is he on? Insurance time right now? Do you see anything? Before you say anything, Southampton, Brighton, Wolves, Liverpool, Watford, Man City. You had something on Newcastle, Jimmy?
Oh, just got to get our first win of the season. We need a little something to go our way. Obviously, you played Norwich at home last week or in the last game, and you get a red card 10 minutes in. That's not the good juju that we need, you know? So a good, solid performance would be nice on both sides of the ball, but we'll see.
Yep, Sunday, Leeds host Brentford. We talked United Palace. Tottenham against Norwich and Villa against Leicester City. Final thoughts from the Premier League, Jonathan Johnson.
Yeah, obviously, I'm keen to see what happens between Villa and Leicester. I've got Stephen Gerrard already going for Premier League Manager of the Month. I think that's maybe a bit premature.
Don't jinx it.
No, but honestly, it reflects just how much change he's brought in with him, especially in those first two matches. Well, actually, no, I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say all three matches, because even against City, you know, the way that Villa responded to going 2-0 down was very, very encouraging. And it feels like, there are good times ahead. And, you know, I think coming up against this Leicester side at this moment in time, I think that's a winnable game for Villa. And if we were to pull that off, and that's 9 points from a possible 12, you know, that is a pretty incredible turnaround.
I'm with you. HB?
Yeah, I mean, the game that I'm most interested in is Watford against Man City. Obviously, not knowing which Watford side you're going to get. When I'm looking at their recent results, they get beaten bad by Liverpool 5-0. Then they score 5 on Everton. They lose to Southampton. They lose to Arsenal, have a red card in that one. They batter Man United, and then they lose to Leicester, and they lose to Chelsea in a tight fought match. If they can bring something special, this is one of those wild card teams that should be beaten by Man City and controlled from start to finish. But they are one that seems to be up for a task of being a giant killer. So that's one that I'm interested in this weekend.
Yeah, no, a very good point about Watford. Who are you, Claudio Ranieri's Watford? Indeed. All right, we're going to take a break, everybody. But when we come back, we will do the rest of Europe as Inter Milan against Roma, Napoli, Atalanta. We also have their Clásica, so much more, La Liga as well, and MLS. Weekend preview, Qué Golazo, we'll be right back.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest 3 words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Here, Qué Golazo Weekend Preview. Jonathan Johnson, Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce. Now to break down the rest of Europe and beyond. We begin in Serie A exclusively on Paramount Plus. Let's begin with a good one here as Roma face Inter Milan. That's Saturday noon Eastern, and Mourinho faces his old club. Jimmy Conrad, what say you, buddy?
Well, as a Roma supporter, I'm a little let's say, I think cautiously optimistic here. I'm a little nervous with this one. Inter have been in good form the last few weeks. They've closed the gap at the top of the table, who have Napoli and AC Milan above them. Roma just lost to Bologna 1-0. It's not great. I'm not feeling great about it, even though this game is at Stadio Olimpico and Jose Mourinho's facing his former club, who he won a treble with back in the day. And that was like peak Jose Mourinho, when everybody still kind of loved him. And now he's become a bit of a caricature of himself and like an evil Bond villain. But, you know, there is something to be said about how he organizes his teams. Obviously, I always give Mourinho's teams a chance, but I wonder which team is going to turn up. They seem to be a little bit hot and cold and very similar, I don't know, to Watford, I guess, to use what Heath was saying before. I'm like, I actually think I could explain Roma in the same way. Which version of these guys is going to show up? But I think for the big ones, they'll be ready to go. My fear, though, is that Edin Dzeko, who Roma left and let go, who had played over 250 times for Roma, who now plays for Inter Milan. And you know what? He's looking pretty good in place of Romelu Lukaku, who obviously left for Chelsea. I think he could be up for this one, going back to the stadium where he had a lot of success. I know he's 35, but age is just a number these days in the modern game. So I'm kind of curious how this is going to go. I think it's going to be close. I'm afraid that Inter might have enough and a little bit more quality, a little bit more momentum to get a result here. And that makes me sad as a Roma supporter.
Yeah, I would agree with Jimmy's sentiments on this one, even though I'm not a Roma supporter. There are also no Tammy Abraham on 5 yellow cards. So he's suspended. Yep. Karsdorp as well, suspended for this one. Not that he's a huge addition to the team, but you're forcing to go deeper into your bench in a match that you want to have your best 11 in this one. And then Inter undefeated in their last 8 against Roma, which, and by the way, Inter right now, you can see sort of them tapping into what they did around this time last year, where they sat a little bit deeper in the table and then started to build this momentum. And I think anytime that you can look last season and say, hey, this was that time of the year where teams started to fall apart and that's where we really came together, you can feel that momentum starting to build up and that belief that ultimately led to a championship. It's just a tough time to play against an Inter Milan who weren't part of the conversation. You go back 2-3 weeks and they were 8 points adrift at the top of the table, even closer, maybe even a few points further than that. And now they can see themselves closing that gap and in form and doing it in a way that's predictable. And again, when you can build a team and build that consistency, it becomes very difficult to beat. And I think this Roma side, regardless of the fact that you have Jose Mourinho there, is going to struggle to get a result. And I see a win coming for Inter Milan. Sorry. Yeah.
JJ?
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree. You know, I think Mourinho has been going through, quite a tough proving period with Roma at the moment. It's quite clear that you know, they're probably not going to get the immediate results that they wanted to get under him without further change to certain parts of the squad. But also at the same time, you know, I'm pretty impressed by the way that Inter have turned things around. They've managed to cut the gap. Admittedly, that's also thanks to, you know, Napoli's growing injury crisis, you know, and Milan inexplicably throwing away some points as well. But, you know, I think credit to them, and it's making for a more interesting title race. I think Inter will probably just shade this one. You know, but it really wouldn't surprise me also at the same time if Roma actually turn up and, you know, manage to get a good result.
Yeah, well, listen, when you look at that table, Napoli, Milan, Inter, Atalanta, and then Roma in fifth, but, you know, they are 6 points behind the Champions League point. Quick predictions on this one, Jimmy C. Shaking his head.
No, it's just the Tammy Abraham issue is a big one. He's been influential. Even if he's not scoring goals, he still has this presence that I think opens up space for other players. Zaniolo should get the start. And I know that there's been some talk about Mourinho saying he needs to go. I don't know. He's been criticizing. He always criticizes the players. I don't know if that helps. But I like Inter Milan to win. I think it'll be a little tighter. Roma drew with Napoli 0-0 not too long ago. I think that Mourinho, because he doesn't have a Tammy Abraham, might get a little bit Rafa Benitez-esque and try to drop everybody back and try to hit him on the counter or on a set piece. That feels kind of what Jose would do in these situations, knowing that Inter are a little bit better and in better form. So Inter Milan to win in under 2.5 goals is plus 450. I think that's pretty crazy value, all things considered. But again, look at the starting lineups. Take a look at who's hurt and who's not, maybe for Inter, and who's going Simone Inzaghi's team at Inter. But I think they're going to be up for it. I think they're going to get a result. So Inter's going to win. I don't know, 2-0, maybe 2-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 2-0 for Inter on this one. And I'm starting to think about, the more I think about Jose Mourinho, and I know this is off topic, but the more I'm seeing him closer to a Felix Magath. And I don't know if you remember his era of management, but he was a sort of fire and brimstone type of manager where you'd take him out to the hills to run and things like that. And that worked for a certain generation. And I feel Jose Mourinho is sort of not only coming into these clubs with a little bit of a negative perspective and a fear factor of people saying, oh no, the first thing he says, I'm going to basically build a wall because he's got this reputation of doing that, but almost being phased out of the type of management style. We talked about getting to the 21st century with Ranić and how you update these clubs and bring them up into the modern eras. And that's also a management style in the way that you manage egos and players. And I wonder if Jose Mourinho is at a point where he needs to change his style of management, especially when you're at a smaller club and don't have the deepest resources in the world to be able to buy yourself a trophy here and there.
And now, good point. JJ, anything to wrap up here in this game, especially with the Mourinho comment?
Oh, I completely agree. You know, I do think that Jose is in danger of being, you know, something of a footballing dinosaur these days. You know, I think Roma, it's arguably one of his last shots at a really, really big club. It wouldn't surprise me to see him potentially going into international management yet next, you know, whether that's, you know, sort of in the immediate future. There's obviously going to be a lot of speculation about the Portugal job if they don't make it to the World Cup. You know, that could be
he's literally the last person Portugal need, to be honest with you. But yeah, go ahead.
No, but it's just that I'm struggling to really see where else I could fit Mourinho in, you know, because Mourinho's gone back to Italy. You know, there was a lot expected of him because his last spell in Serie A, you know, was hugely successful with Inter Milan, you know, and it's just kind of been a little bit underwhelming. Started kind of in like heartwarming fashion, seeing him, you know, munching pizza and sipping Coke on the train after a win. But you know, those kind of good times have worn off a little bit now, you know, and it's just kind of back to the same old routine, really, which everyone around Europe is pretty familiar with. So, you know, I don't think that it's, you know, it's sort of time to cut losses at all yet. I imagine he'll be given at least the season. But, you know, I think that Mourinho, in order to succeed with this Roma side, is going to need to make even greater sweeping changes. And I'm not sure that it's something that Roma should necessarily sanction, because as we've seen, Mourinho doesn't necessarily stay in too many places too long these days. And, you know, quite often will leave a squad in need of major repair afterwards.
Yeah, we will be seeing that, especially it'll be very difficult to break that Atalanta, Inter, Milan, Napoli top four hierarchy. But all right, very quick on Napoli, Atalanta, Napoli lead Serie A. But my goodness, the injuries are everywhere. Kalidou Koulibaly will be out. until 2022. We already know about Victor Osimhen as well. There's some other injuries as well. Fabian Ruiz, Lorenzo Insigne, I believe, as well. My goodness. Heath Pierce, Napoli lead the table, but it's getting very dangerous, especially in this time of year. And now they have to face Atalanta, who basically don't let you breathe in any game. How do you see this one?
Yeah, you know, Atalanta put a thumping on Venezia, our new Team America, in the midweek, and did it with a pretty rotated squad. And so to bring those players back, they're red hot right now. I'm not betting against Atalanta. And then, as you mentioned, with no Koulibaly, I just don't see how they're going to prevent this Atalanta side from being able to score goals in this one.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, sorry. I'll go hop in really quick and just say that I love Atalanta right now. They're unbeaten in nine. They get to rotate their squad as they start to welcome other players back in. Goosen's out wide. You know, you're starting to see a nice rotation of Duván Zapata.
New maybe contract not starting for Gasperini as well. Yeah,
new contract, and he's got it through 2024, which is great. You know, he's obviously overseen a tremendous success for the club. And I like how they're playing right now. With regard to Napoli, they were up 2-0 on Sassuolo. Gave up two late goals to draw 2-2. Now with Koulibaly out, Juan Jesus should come in, but he's not Koulibaly, and I think there could be some issues there. That said, Napoli at home are fantastic. They are so, so good at home, but I don't know if it's going to be enough. I actually think this might be my sneaky pick of the weekend. I think this is going to be a great game, by the way, and if you're going to spend any time with Serie A, this should be the one to watch. There's going to be a lot of goals. It was 4-2 the last time they played in favor of Atalanta. I like Atalanta to win plus 185, and I'd throw it into a parlay for sure.
I love it. That's Saturday, 2:45 Eastern. JJ, go ahead.
Yeah, I fancy Atalanta to win this one as well, build on their victory away against Juve a couple of weeks ago. The other thing I would say is, you know, given all of their injury absences, if Napoli can pull off a draw here somehow, that, you know, that's a very, very positive result for them. You know, and they'll just have to hope that Milan don't make up that gap on them that they've managed to open up. But I think it's going to be a really tough period now between, you know, this match and the end of the calendar year. And, you know, Napoli, I think, are really going to have to be looking at the January transfer window and potentially looking to make a few moves, even if it's just temporary ones. But for me, I can see Atalanta, you know, winning this, I'm going to say by two goals. So let's be hopeful. I'll say 3-1 Atalanta.
Yeah, we had Fabrizio Romano on the show earlier this week talking about how Napoli and some other Italian clubs are really going to be hunting for center backs in January. HP, did you give that score prediction?
Yeah, I would. I mean, the hard part is that Napoli are, I think, undefeated and almost 20 at home, and they never give up goals. But this is just one, again, where it's like you're playing against an Atalanta. When you play against an Atalanta, all bets are off when they're in form, and they believe and can and will beat anybody. And so I'm going to say 2-1 for Atalanta to win this one.
By the way, you know, there's also the Champions League coming up back in big week as well. So I wonder how much that will fall into frame. All right, Des Norris, what's the rest of Serie A looking like? And by the way, we had a great interview with Spezia's chief revenue officer, Luca Scafati, talking about the club. Obviously, it became the fifth American-owned club in Serie A. Really good chat. So make sure that you check it out. But here are the rest of the games. Bologna-Fiorentina, Dusan Vlahovic. Let's see how he keeps going, by the way. That's a game on Sunday. AC Milan as well. Salernitana, Roma, Inter Milan, Napoli. What else we got there? Is that it? No, oh, no. We got some more games there on Sunday. Sunday's the big one. Sunday is the big one as well. So if you're watching this on YouTube, there's all the fixtures. Before we say goodbye to Serie A, anything that you're looking to there, Jimmy?
Well, I want to see what Juve is going to do and how they're going to perform. Very similar to Manchester United in some capacity, where I think you could ask every single player on the team, hey, who's our best 11 and what's our best formation? And you're going to get 11 different answers. And I think that's a bit of a problem for Maxi Allegri to really figure out, you know, what he has on his hands and how he can organize them best. So I'm kind of curious to see how they play, and because Genoa's not going to just lay down. They're going to come out and fight, knowing that this is a pretty vulnerable Juve team.
Yeah, my only thought on the weekend is AC Milan playing Salernitana. Obviously, I think they'll win this game. Salernitana are going to continue to struggle in the league, but they lost Simon Kjær for the rest of the season. And I think that's a big hit to this team. We talk about depth, especially this time of year when that depth gets tested. I don't think AC Milan are particularly deep, so much so that Pioli's already talking about going to the transfer window, but only taking somebody if it's going to be additive or improve the squad. So I worry about the long-term ramifications of losing a key player like that. So I like their odds to win this game, but I'm thinking big picture for them. This is a really tough time for AC Milan, especially going into Champions League next week, where they got to play Liverpool with a glimmer of hope of getting through somewhere.
Yeah, tough blow for Simon Kjaer, a friend of the show, spoke to him a couple of weeks ago that, you know, just coming after the Ballon d'Or award, which he said was one of the highlights of his career, you know, to be ruled out, you know, pretty much for the rest of the season, that is going to be very, very tough for Milan to overcome. No, the one that I'm going to keep my eye on, like Jimmy, is the Juve-Genoa game, but for another reason, because I'm just wondering when Shevchenko is going to be able to break this duck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Genoa have won for, like, I don't know, at least 2 months, 2.5 months, something like that, something crazy. You know, I think he was a smart pick for the new American project there. You know, but I just think the longer it goes on, you know, without getting a win, you know, the more the pressure builds, you know, and they're in need of a positive result. And, you know, Juve have looked pretty sketchy in quite a few of their games so far this season. They've lost in games where you don't expect them to. You know, in Genoa, even though they're generally drawing a lot of the time, you know, they still managed to find the back of the net. So I'm wondering if there's potentially another upset there, because Max Allegri cannot afford another slip up.
Indeed. And that's a Serie A wrap up. And by the way, we spent, what, 10% on Juventus? The rest was everything else, right? I'm not even going to say their Twitter name or anything. There's just a specific person that keeps on bugging Kego Lasso that every time we talk about Serie A, it's always Juventus. Oh, and it's like, that could not be further from the truth. If anything, it's more Villa than Juventus at this show. So there you have it. Okay. So I don't want any more complaints after that. Yes, I am very petty, Tom Petty. All right, let's move on. Let's go to the Bundesliga. Der Klassiker. This is a good one. Saturday, 12:30 Eastern. Bayern Munich leads the table with 31 points. Borussia Dortmund, 30 points. This is it. Whoever wins, of course, remains or either go, stop. A massive game, obviously, because Leverkusen have 24 points, so there's a little bit of a gap. So this is it. First against Heath Pierce. Let's go, baby. Der Klassiker. How good is this?
It's amazing, and it's the perfect timing for it. Obviously, Erling Haaland's return to the team is much welcomed. I still think that Dortmund are continuing to find a way. I don't know how to stay in this as they continue to deal with injuries. Mostly their young players, again, uncharacteristic of a club that has young players to have this many injuries at the age that they are. But I love this matchup. I think this is a true test for Borussia Dortmund, having Haaland back. I also think it's a great test for Lewandowski to remind the world that he was screwed out of a Ballon d'Or that I believe he should have won.
Cheer.
And so, yeah, just overall as a matchup, this is the one that you wait all year long for in the Bundesliga. And the fact that they're both sitting on top, I don't know if it has long-term ramifications as to who goes on and wins the league. I think that's going to be more against who beats the relegation battlers and some of those middle table teams in the spring of next year. But overall, to have these implications where they're this tight on points, on two teams that are in different points of their development as a squad, I, you know, you can't ask for something better.
Yeah, I'd just say that this is going to be a great game. I think that Erling Haaland coming back in. What's funny is that when he's in the team, they averaged 3.3 goals a game in the Bundesliga, but they give up 1.9 goals. So there's going to be a lot of goals in this one now that he's back in the lineup. Without him, though, they're a little bit more conservative. They only score 1.7 goals and allow just one. So now that he's in, I think they take a little bit more risk. I'm curious to see about his partnership with Daniel Malen, who is starting to find his way a little bit with Borussia Dortmund. I think his talent was always there. It's just kind of adapting and being consistent. I think that's what you want out of your players, is being consistent. I think a big loss, though, speaking about injuries, Jude Bellingham might not be available. He seems a bit of a doubt. Hopefully he'll get in the team. He's one of the top young players in the world for me. Joshua Kimmich on the other side is out for sure. That's a loss for Bayern. He's one of the top.
Who cares about Joshua Kimmich? Whatever.
Yeah, well, Leon Goretzka, yeah, you know, he's doubtful. He had a hip injury. He hasn't been training at full. He probably will start. That said, I really like Heath's point about Robert Lewandowski being fired up and having more than enough, bulletin board material to be ready to go to score some goals. He has scored actually 20 goals in 14 games against his former club. And Borussia Dortmund, he spent 5 seasons with the black and yellow. There'll only be 15,000 fans at the stadium due to COVID protocol. So I think that's a bit of a loss. Having actually played there before, that is a very intimidating stadium. Not that Bayern are all that intimidated by that type of stuff. But I do think team gets momentum, it does factor into how you play. And you get that little bit of confidence that I think a big crowd could help you with. So that said, there's a couple certainties in life. Death, taxes, and Robert Lewandowski scoring against Borussia Dortmund. So I'm going to go with my bet here. I'm going to go with something I go with in the Champions League as well. Bayern Munich to win, Robert Lewandowski to score, and both teams to score. That's plus 220.
I love it.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it does pan out that way. I think it's... I mean, listening to what Marco Rose has been saying in the build-up to the match, it doesn't sound like Haaland will be able to go 90 minutes. So assuming that he does start, that's probably him done after about an hour, assuming that he holds up that long. I think that gives this game potentially sort of that long to be quite a balanced affair and for Dortmund to do the damage. And if they can't do it after that, then, you know, I think Bayern will just be too strong for them despite a few of those absences. I know that Choupo-Moting's quarantine might come to an end just in time for the match if he tests negative. Sounds like Stanisic is out as well. So, you know, there are a couple of absences on the Bayern side as well, but it's all relative. And Bayern are pretty much, you know, one of, if not the deepest squads in Europe. So I think Bayern will probably just about edge this, but, you know, it all depends on how Haaland's minutes are handled and how much damage Dortmund can do when he's on the pitch.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, we want to have some time for MLS. So let's go quickly on La Liga. Okay. Just some key matches here. Real Betis against Barcelona Saturday, 10:15 Eastern. Real Sociedad against Real Madrid Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Just one quick thought from La Liga. Let's begin with you, JJ. Let's go back to you. Anything from La Liga that you want to quickly bring up before we go to MLS?
Oh, yeah, the Betis are going to beat Barcelona this weekend. it's really funny. Betis as a team to follow in Spain, there's not been that much success over the years to sort of get excited about. Obviously, you have a fantastic cult hero in Joaquin, who incidentally was pretty much the player that got me interested in Betis in the first place when I bought this shirt 20 years ago or so. But, Betis now are really starting to deliver on their potential under Pellegrini. You got Nabil Fekir, finally playing with some consistency, which is great to see. And, I'm just hopeful that the Betis can sort of sneak into those Champions League places in the next couple of weeks. And I think, it's still a good time to play Barca. They're actually above them in the table at the moment by about 4 points. So for me, I think that this one has the makings of a bit of an upset, if we can call it that.
No, I just say really quick about Betis, the value there for them to go to Camp Nou and get a result is plus 550. I like it for the reasons you're talking about. Unfortunately, Nabil Fekir is out due to yellow card accumulation. That hurts them. But Wanmi has been on fire. Scored a hat trick against Levante in their last match. A game I'll be taking, keeping an eye on is Real Sociedad facing Real Madrid, the Real Derby. I feel like Madrid just have a little bit too much. Sociedad, good time to face him. David Silva apparently has been injured. He's not going to play in this one. I think that's going to force Mikel Oyarzabal to come inside. Even though I think Real Sociedad have enough, I just don't think there's anything slowing down Karim Benzema or Vinicius Jr. And I feel like Carlo Ancelotti's starting to find a nice, consistent lineup. And that makes me a little fearful for Sociedad with regard to this. I could see like a low-scoring draw here, but if I was going to give an edge to one of the teams, it would be Madrid.
Yeah, the last thing I would say is that no one's mentioned Hector Bellerin coming back for Real Betis. That's everybody knows what kind of quality he came through, what he has coming through the Arsenal footballing system. But on the Sociedad match with Real Madrid, same thing. Jimmy mentioned them starting to find that consistent roster. I think that's a little bit of a fear factor, knowing how many games you have this time of year. I worry about that lack of squad rotation and what that could, again, mean if you have any sort of knocks due to just fatigue and accumulation. You see that happening this time of year. I would love for it to not be a stat, but it is. And anytime you can't rotate, you're putting your players more at risk. But obviously, this is a huge match for Real Madrid to continue to solidify themselves at the top of the table. And I see them beating Sociedad, but overall really good matchup and great games in La Liga this weekend. Also, yeah, all of them are on Saturday.
Yeah.
So who made the scheduling for this? Because
I don't know, but it's kind of good for us in the weekend recap, I guess. We get a little bit of breathing time, but a very good point in Real Madrid, by the way, everybody. They are slowly but surely taking that control of La Liga, 7 points top of the table. And by the way, Real Madrid have won 6 of their last 8 away games, the biggest tally of wins away from home since 2014-2015, which was also coincidentally managed by Carlo Ancelotti. So they're doing things away, which is key for La Liga and Real Madrid, of course. All right, we're going to wrap things up. We're going to say goodbye to Jonathan Johnson. Before we say goodbye, Jonathan, because we're going to talk MLS, JJM. We just found out, especially Jimmy Conrad here, just found out your team, your MLS team, who's that?
Yeah, exactly. So as we were joking before we came on air, I've always kept an eye on San Jose Earthquakes ever since I had a very brief flirtation with potentially covering Major League Soccer years and years ago. Got to know them a little bit when they came over and did a bit of winter training in England. So can't speak highly enough of the Quakes, and obviously delighted to be joined by a club legend, Jimmy Conrad, on a regular basis. Here.
Jimmy, show us more. What's in there?
I already opened it up because it's
all over the place.
Championship ring.
I thought they just gave you a piece of wood and engraved for winning. I guess you get a ring too.
I actually get a ring.
I love it.
I appreciate you being a Quakes fan, JJ. That's amazing.
Do you kiss it like Raul style before bed every night?
Maybe I do.
I love it.
That's why Landon Donovan would do the celebrations with the kisses, because he's kissing the Earthquakes ring.
Des Norris calls it a tiny coffin, just like Earthquakes playoffs chances as well.
Low blow.
I love it. It'll
be our season next season.
Our season. God. I love it.
Jonathan Johnson, Earthquakes fan. Now I've seen it all. Jonathan Johnson, thank you so much. John_LeGossip on Twitter. Follow all his content on CBS Sports. JJ, thank you so much, buddy. We'll see you next time.
Take care, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, let's talk, everybody, now. The Peruvian American sandwich here, Heath Pierce, Jimmy Conrad, LME. We're going to talk MLS conference finals, or just, you know, the semifinals. Let's just make it easier for everybody. All right. In the West, Portland Timbers against Real Salt Lake on Saturday. By the way, I talked to Gio Savarese, one of the best people out there. I'm so happy I finally got to talk to him. And then the other side, Philadelphia Union host NYCFC on Sunday. And also check out Tati Castellanos and yours truly chatted as well. He won't be available for that one. But all of these games are amazing. If Real Salt Lake win, by the way, boys, and NYCFC win, we could have MLS Cup final in Yankee Stadium.
They won't play at a Yankee Stadium.
Please make it happen. Jimmy, let's begin with your thoughts. I mean, we can go anywhere. Do you want to take West?
I'll take the West. What I'll say very quickly is that the Portland Timbers were the number 4 seed at the start of the playoffs in the West, and Real Salt Lake were number 7, meaning that Real Salt Lake have to win every single game away from home to be MLS Cup champions. And they are doing it in fine form. And actually, I feel like they're getting better as this goes along. Now, obviously, they sat back against the Sounders in Seattle and didn't get any shots on goal over 120 minutes and won in penalties. But they actually went into Kansas City, another club that I used to play for 8 years. And I'm on the wall over there in the stadium. That's my flex of the day. How long did that take me? It only took me an hour to get a flex.
No, yeah, you just showed us your ring. You flexed multiple times so far.
I did multiple flex within a 2 minute span.
Flex away, Jimmy.
But they went in there and actually thought they were disciplined. They had a plan. And maybe the first half, Kansas City got a little bit of the better of them. But I thought that they some ways pocketed the attack for Sporting Kansas City, and then brought in some super subs that changed the game. They went on to win it. Kansas City,
and they have a villain, Jimmy Conrad.
They do. David Ochoa.
This league needs a villain, and I love it. I love it.
Yeah, he's not afraid to talk some trash, so I appreciate that as well. Going into Portland to get a result when they know they have a chance at home to book their ticket to the MLS Cup final, knowing that they could potentially host it if that happens, it's got to be. And I actually think that pressure worked against Kansas City. Once they saw the Colorado Rapids got knocked out, they would have their chance to host the Western Conference final and maybe host the MLS Cup. And they didn't take it. Salt Lake, for me, are flying right now. They have that Team of Destiny vibe. And I don't think that should be underplayed or not given enough weight. I think that they are just playing with house money. Rustak should be back in the team. And I think that's important because he's been hurt a little bit. Now, talking about injuries, we could argue the Timbers are missing their two top players who are hurt. Sebastian Blanco's out, and Darren Asprilla are both going to be out for this Western Conference.
Asprilla for a red card, right?
So, that's right. So, and Blanco's, I think he's going to be out for the playoffs unless he pulls some like Willis Reed.
Their lead assist king.
Yeah, the 1970s New York Knicks center, you know, that's going to come back all hobbled and still try to make a play. Kirk Gibson hitting that home run. I don't think we're going to see that. And I think that really hurts Portland. I think that makes their attack a lot more predictable, and I think that plays into Salt Lake's hands. And again, that vibe for Salt Lake is something fierce. I actually like Salt Lake to pull off the upset and book their ticket to the MLS final. I know. I'm putting my flag in the ground there.
Well, Jimmy, I'll follow up on the West and then talk East, and you can follow up on that if you want to.
Okay, but sure.
My West thought is just obviously when we're talking about management, right? When we're talking about a coach that has brought in that belief, when he came in, He came in the first year and took them to a final, and they got absolutely battered by Atlanta in Atlanta. And we're humbled by that. But when you look at the team that they had on the field, when you look at the squad that they had, they weren't one of the better teams in the league. And he, I guess the point I'm trying to make is he has that motivation. Jimmy, you and I know we both played pickup with him. We both hung out with him tons of times in New York when he was with the Cosmos. An incredible person, an incredible manager that just gets the most out of the players. Anytime that I've gone up to Portland, I pop by, I see him, he welcomes me in, and you just feel this embrace.
He's just the best, family. Man.
He's amazing. I love Gio.
That's incredible. The flip side, though, is that you have this Real Salt Lake side. And funny enough, Real Salt Lake's only championship came in 2009 when they made the playoffs on the last day and, again, had that team of destiny type of mentality where they snuck into the playoffs based on a couple other teams. They needed help. They won their final.
I remember. I was still playing. I remember it well.
Yeah. They needed help from others. They got the help from other teams. They won in the last game, and then they made this scrappy run to win the final. And they sort of had that same sort of mentality. And yeah, we sometimes think about this sort of like nothing to lose type of mentality. But when you're in the playoffs and you find yourself further than you were supposed to be, and you find yourself statistically saying, hey, we haven't had a shot, but we won, those are the things you actually can rely upon in these games where you believe that you can beat anybody. And you go, guys, we got nothing to lose. We're not supposed to be here. No one expects us to be here. Everyone's laughing at us right now. And then you've got the villain in Ochoa. I got no time for that because I wish he was a villain in Olympic qualifying for the U.S. men's U.S. national team. But we'll get to that another time. On the Eastern Conference, again, missing your best player, your goal scorer, I think that's a huge loss for NYCFC. Obviously, for anybody that hasn't been paying attention, it happened in the 113th minute, getting sent off in a game where you are now the key player for everyone to be sent off. He's also been fined for refusing to leave the field in the 113th minute by the league.
Not surprised.
An undisclosed fee. But knowing that, you know, obviously imagine the emotion you go into when you've been sent off and now you're out for this game, suspended for one match in this one. Gives Philly the opportunity. Philly, I think, is the best team probably left in the playoffs in terms of the quality of the squad that they have. I thought they were probably one of the worst teams that entered the playoffs, but now you've seen most of the big playoff teams kind of go out. So I like Philly's odds to be able to do this one. I like Portland to be able to finally to take this one against Real Salt Lake. And then the final likely then would be, well, not likely, would be hosted in Portland, which would be an unbelievable experience for an MLS Cup. Although, obviously, you know, I would love to see that being hosted in Philly as well. I just don't want it on a baseball field, guys.
Yeah, Jimmy, why don't you jump on the East there?
No, I'm just going to say, without Tati Castellanos, who is the leading goal scorer in MLS, I just don't know where NYCFC is going to get their goals. I'm a big Maxi Morales fan, the number 10 for NYCFC. He's cute as a button. He's got those Ever Banega vibes. You know, I really love that dude.
He's cute as a button, Lester.
He's cute as a button, everybody. But is he enough to, you know, maybe on a set piece, I could see NYCFC getting a goal, but in the run of play, I just don't know how they're going to do it with
Ishmael Tajiri. Is he good enough to do
it? They're good enough, but I just feel like the center backs and the goalkeeper, you need a hot goalkeeper to win anything of consequence. We say it a lot here. And Andre Blake, for me, tremendous in the penalties against Nashville. Yep. At home, the record at home this season is 13 wins, one loss, and two draws. And without the striker that I think you needed to maybe penetrate that defense and get some good opportunities on goal consistently, and him not being there, I just feel like Philly, this is really stacking up for Philly. Now, I will say, just to throw this out there, and everybody who's a Philly fan is like, please don't say it. There have been a lot of Open Cup finals, U.S. Open Cup finals in Philadelphia, and they've gotten to the final a couple of times, and they never win that one. They have to actually get past this obstacle first, and I think that they will. If Castellanos was playing, I think I might have leaned towards NYCFC to do something, maybe take it into extra time, maybe go to penalties again. But I just think that Philly's going to have enough on both sides of the ball to outlast this NYCFC team, who should be proud of what they've accomplished this season, but it's not going to be enough to get there. And then I still think RSL is going to win. I think it's going to be close. And then they're going to host. Philly's going to host for a chance to win.
All right, so let's do these predictions then. All right, so who's your final? What's your final? Jimmy, I know Heath, you already said it, but I want you to repeat it.
I'll say RSL Philly in the final. Philly's going to host the final December 11th.
All right, Heath?
I'm saying Portland against the Philadelphia Union in Portland for the final. And by the way, Castellanos is your golden boot. Like, imagine the demoralizing feeling of a locker room saying we've relied upon this guy and now he's gone. I mean, this is the golden boot winner for Major League Soccer, and you don't have him. I don't care who you have on the field. Somebody scored or been that big of a producer for your team. It's hard to replace that, and especially in such a short time, and both mentally and physically.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it is worth mentioning that it's a double-edged sword because it was Castellanos' goal as well that helped get NYCFC to here in the first place. So players like Rodriguez, Maxi Morales, and Jesus Medina, by the way, who were still kind of waiting for him to light it up. I'm going to say NYCFC wins this one and Portland wins this one. And Portland will host, right, against NYCFC. And
can I just say for the record that Portland actually do play in a baseball stadium, but it's been retrofitted to actually.
So it's like either way. Stadium. Right, right. So we have our
You might get your wish, Luis. No, you might get your wish.
They fixed it. But if you want to watch the Battered Bastards of Baseball, that's a great documentary about the Portland team that was owned by the actor and a celebrity. It's an incredible film that was based in that stadium that is now one of the better atmospheres in MLS.
It is. It's one of the best, maybe the best. Definitely the best when it comes to these players, by the way. I gotta give some love to NYCFC. It's the team of my hometown and the only Peruvian left. Alex Collins is in NYCFC. But that's it. MLS Conference Finals. Make sure that you check him out this weekend. So much content as well. By the way, Jimmy Heath, yours truly, will return for the weekend recap. Jimmy Heath will also be here for the USMNTR. We got so much coming. We're nearly to 6,000 subscribers, everybody. Please, please just keep on subscribing. Heath, thank you so much, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I got to get back to reading these books behind me. You know, too much talking for me. I mean, more reading.
Yeah, half of one, 385 to go. That's right. All right, Jimmy Conrad, thank you, buddy. Flexing.
Thanks for having me. It's what I do on the show. I flex.
I love it. Thank you, everybody. Make sure to follow us on Que Golazo Pod, Heath Pierce, Jimmy Conrad on Twitter and Instagram as well. We're on CBS Sports, your CBS Sports app, youtube.com/ Que Golazo, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and so much more. Enjoy all the games this weekend, and we will see you next time.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.